Greetings and welcome to MERS Monday, the official podcast of the MERS Political Newsletter. I'm Kyle Malin, joined by the boss, John Rurink, and Jack Spencer. A little later, we're going to be listening to some audio from this weekend's Republican convention. John James had a press conference in which he rolled out kind of his rolling prop for this coming election, which is a
Pacer, wasn't it?
1975 Pacer. I would have been 2 years old when this thing was rolling off the assembly line. A nice pea green color being towed by a huge 2019 Dodge Ram truck hauling that thing around. So it's like we're bringing back the whole Mark Brewer gimmick where he was driving around Cliff Taylor's car.
Hey, it works. It works. Automobiles click with the Michigan voters, you know.
And it was a nice visual for the TV cameras, too, so... We'll see what he does as far as bringing that around. So we've got audio of that press conference. Also, we have audio from Mike Shirkey, and we also have audio of the entire Republican ticket addressing the media after their convention.
Let me ask you, Kyle, since you were following both these conventions closely, and I didn't attend either one, but it reads like the Republican one wasn't as exciting as the Democratic one. Is that a fair assessment?
Well, I think the Republican one had a little bit more drama since we had the Tom Leonard race going on with Tanya Shoemaker. I think the Republican one was extremely well done as far as being efficient with how they did things. We got in there at 10 o'clock. It didn't start much later than 10 o'clock. And we were all out of there roughly around 3 o'clock. And we could have been out of there even earlier. But the Board of Education race was extremely close for that second spot between Dr. Ziley and Ida Byrd Hill, who Ron Weiser's wife, Eileen Weiser, Board of Education member, was endorsing. That was down to 4 votes, and then they did their retabulation weighting based on who was all there, and then it had Ida Byrd Hill winning by 2 votes. And so then they had to do a recount, and that took about an hour. And then they came back and said, no, Dr. Ziley indeed did win the second spot. So absent that, we would have been out of there even quicker. So over on the Democratic side, it seems like things got stretched out a bit longer than need be. Their voting process had a bit of hiccups when it came to voting for all the boards. They had to restart it a couple times. The lines were extremely long. They voted by the iPads. And so the process was a bit lengthy. And then on Sunday when they gave the speeches, it was supposed to be from 9 to noon. And Gretchen didn't wrap up until darn near 2 o'clock. And by the time she was done with her speech, the crowd and the audience sounded more like, you know, some golfer at a mid-major tournament just parring the 6th hole. I mean, it was kind of like courtesy claps as opposed to a roar. I don't know if they're going to do what they did this year in the future as far as having a nominating convention and an endorsement convention, because there was much, much more energy at that endorsement convention than at this nominating one. And it was because of the race, right? I mean, you had a lot more enthusiasm, I think, as far as people and wanting to stay and listening to the speeches where there was actually something to stay for, as opposed to a crowd that was just coming to see some speeches.
On the Republican convention, when Justice Clement, when that issue came up, was it just a smattering? Was it a small group of people, or was it a large group of people that were kind of doing the booing and the hissing because of her decision on voters, not politicians?
Yeah, it was certainly noticeable. I wouldn't say it was overwhelming.
And do you think she's going to have a problem going forward?
Probably, as far as like getting Republicans to go out and vote. I mean, it was pretty noticeable that there was this feeling that Curtis Wilder was what the delegates there would want, and Beth Clement was not what they wanted. There was somebody handing out flyers to folks who were entering the Lansing Center that had a big circle with a line across in front of Beth Clement's face talking about Proposal 2 and just basically saying, she's the reason why we have Proposal 2. And there was nothing that was done to combat that message at all. Outside of Vic Fritz, the Cass County prosecutor, giving a short nominating introduction for her, nobody gave her any support, aerial support at all. And this is where I think if Rick Snyder had been there, this is one of the many things that he could have done had he been there. And I probably should have been there, would be to explain why Beth Clement is a justice right now and all the things that she did when she was with the Senate Republicans, what she did for him when she was his legal counsel, and all of the different projects and everything that she's worked on, and why she is somebody that this delegation will want to vote for.
But she's still going to have the incumbent designation on
the
ballot.
She will.
She's still going to be kind of immune from the straight party vote because that doesn't carry over into the votes for justices when people cast straight party vote. You really think she's going to have a hard time winning that race?
Well, I don't know if she will or not, but I think what's going to happen is that the diehard Republicans, you know what are going to go on, realize that there are four candidates on the Democrat and Republican side combined running for two slots. And they want Curtis Wilder still on the bench. And what I think may happen is that they're going to single issue. They're going to just pluck one down for Wilder and leave it at that, in the hopes that Wilder gets on, and if Clement gets on, whatever. If she loses, whatever. And that's with the strong Republican folks. And, you know, in these races, when there's only, you know, 10,000 votes that could separate or make a difference, that could make a difference.
Mm-hmm.
But I was just surprised that nobody stood up for her and tried to make the case for her. And I think that if Rick Snyder had been there, that would have been something that he could have assisted with. And he didn't. I mean, he gave the video and, you know, there was polite applause. But, you know, there was an enthusiasm gap in that there was really nothing that got the delegates riled up. I thought John James was probably the most excitable candidate there. He actually got folks excited. And maybe it's because he had somebody to beat up on in Debbie Stabenow, but he was a very electric speaker. He could very well be the best Republican U.S. Senate candidate I've seen since I've started here in 2001, because he is energized. He's excited. People are excited about him. He's got good gimmicks. He's been working with the grassroots. Mm-hmm. People are really excited about him. Now, do I think he's going to win? It doesn't look like he would, but as far as being a great candidate, he is a great candidate. I think he's doing a phenomenal job and was probably the highlight of that convention. I think, though, that Rick Snyder really didn't do himself any favors by being a no-show. I think he would have really improved the convention had he been there. And he didn't have to necessarily give a full-throated endorsement of Bill Schuette, but he could have reminded people all the things he has done in his administration. It's not all about right to work. He's done so much as far as fiscal responsibility within governments, from the state government down to local governments, put OPEB and pensions on the front burners as big issues that governments are now actually tackling. He took care of the Detroit public school situation. He was the first governor to basically say, we got to do something about the finances in the city of Detroit, and we got to put that on the right path, and he did. And handled those issues. Certainly, there's a lot of negatives with Flint and this PFAS situation going on, but I think he owed it to those delegates to give them a reason to be excited why they're Republicans and why they need more 8 years of a Republican in office, because I didn't really get the sense that they were really excited by much. And Bill Schuette came out there and talked about his paychecks and cutting the income tax and talking about getting every kids to read, and then made a vague reference to fixing the roads. But his issues right now are not very deep. Mm-hmm. He hasn't really laid out any policy platforms. He didn't have much to talk about outside of we're going to win. And, you know, with the stuff going on with Paul Manafort and Michael Cohen for Donald Trump, wasn't a lot of talk about Trump right now. I mean, it was a bad week to talk about Trump.
Wondering, was Pat Kobach at this convention?
No. And I think that was another thing, Jack, that really struck me, because there are a lot of those delegates there who love Patrick Kobach. And I know he only got 15% of the vote or whatever, but that 15% are very passionate Republicans who would run through a wall for Patrick Kobach. From him not being there, I think was unfortunate, because even if Bill Schuette would have had Patrick Kobach up there and say, I appreciate all the ideas that Patrick Kobach brought to the table, and I understand that some of them may seem a little far-fetched and he would not embrace all of them. It seems to me he could embrace one or two. Some improvements on the roads, having to do with savings accounts, public school savings accounts. That's another idea that's going through the legislature that I think is an easy one for a Republican to endorse. I think that would have gone a long way to help kind of unify the party more. I think Patrick Kolbeck not being there was not good for them as far as the unifying front. And it really started, honestly, when Mike Pence came into town and didn't mention Patrick Kolbeck and Jim Hines when he mentioned Sandy Pensler and Brian Kelly. I think that stung Patrick Kolbeck and his supporters, who are just kind of looking around saying, WTF, how can you forget about us? We're the ones who are knocking doors and getting people excited and making the phone calls. And I just don't think those are the people you want to alienate. You want those people energized because you're going to need every vote you can get in November.
So Patrick Kolbeck, had he, let's say, been there and had he stood up and made a speech about why everybody should remember to vote Republican and turn out, that might have been very, very helpful.
I think it would have been. I think it would have given a bit more energy to the convention, because the feeling I got talking with folks was this is the same old, basically just being driven right through by the establishment, and we'll go along because we lost. But I didn't sense a lot of energy, Jack, honestly. I think Kolbeck could have delivered some energy from a certain segment of the party who really connect with him.
So essentially the Democratic convention had, would you say they had every part of the Democratic Party showing up and being represented?
Yeah.
Whereas the Republican side maybe didn't.
Yeah, I mean, the Democrats, I think, maybe went a little too far in having everybody come up and give speeches. I mean, it went on so long that folks just gradually left and left and left. And then by the time it was Gretchen Whitmer and Garland Gilchrist, I mean, there was hardly, it seemed like there might have been even more people on stage than in the crowd to watch him because they just let it go on so long. But as far as unifying the party, Sri Tanadar went on Off the Record and talked about how he would do whatever Gretchen Whitmer wanted. Abdul Al-Sayed gave the nominating speech for Dana Nessel. He's been a complete team player and class act after his loss. Obviously, he's got some other ambitions, but for right now, I would agree that it seems like the Democrats are doing better at getting every party and everybody to the table. There are a couple observations. Jacob was covering the Democratic convention early on Saturday. A couple of things that he mentioned that I thought was noteworthy. He did say the Progressive Caucus, which was a big driver in that endorsement convention, was fairly light compared to what I saw at the endorsement convention. And I think that really speaks to how well Dana Nessel did in bringing people to that endorsement convention. The reason that was so well attended is because Dana Nessel brought those people there. And it wasn't just because there's just a bunch of progressive people who are motivated. It's because Dana Nessel motivated them. And without a race of no, it wasn't really a good motivating factor. Another thing that I want to mention is Macomb County and that split there. In that Fred Miller-Steve Beter race was really the latest incarnation of the Mark Hackle and David Bonnier split. And I had a good conversation with Andy Levin, who is going to be the congressman now in that 9th Congressional District. And I think he is committed to try and bridge that a little bit. You know, that David Bonnier crew that is representative now with Fred Miller as going to be the county clerk there in Macomb County, it looks like, represents kind of an older school, blue-collar, socially conservative but economically liberal Catholic bent of the party that still very much exists there, whereas Mark Hackle represents kind of the new Democratic Party. And there's some mending there that still needs to go on, and I think Andy Levin might be really in the best position to help bridge that gap. And that's really, though, the only bridging that I see that needs to be made there. Otherwise, they seem quite unified. I think they were just kind of bored this weekend, honestly.
Well, when you don't have any real races that, you know, people care about, maybe that has something to do with it.
Well, it could be. And, you know, for the board races, the Board of Education, the university boards, there were a lot of people voting. I mean, to see the lines out there, and they had, I think the winning candidates had more than 2,000 votes, and I know they weighed them and all that, so it was, you know, it's not like a raw vote or anything like that. But the lines were very long, and there was a lot of people still there to vote, even if they didn't hang around till 2 hours after the convention was supposed to end to hear speeches.
Sort of listening to your description, I want to ask both of you a question. If you know, given sort of the divisions that you mentioned in the Republican Party that were evident on the convention and with the convention, have the Republicans just been too successful for too long that it's just kind of fizzling out and falling apart for them?
Success can breed boredom, that's for certain. My sense has been that, yeah, I think that there's definitely something to that in the state of Michigan, and just the old pendulum swinging back, you know, as far as what I think is likely to happen. I would tend to think that the Dems have that. That would be my number one. A lot of people talk about things nationally and exciting the Dems. I actually think the normal pendulum swinging back may have more to do with what ends up happening this November than even those things that have been happening at the national level.
Yeah, and that's why I would agree that they may be a little bored with their success, and that's why I wondered if not getting some new energy or some different talking points as to why they should be excited wouldn't have been more helpful, why Rick Snyder being there wouldn't have been more helpful, Patrick Kolbeck. And at some point, you know, I know this hasn't been a good week for Donald Trump, so you don't really want to see him this week and maybe not next week, but at some point it would seem like he is the person who brings energy to the party right now. And if his presence is what's needed to bring about more energy, then maybe that's where they got to go. All right. While we've got the lawnmowers out here buzzing around behind me, now's a good time to go to this John James clip. You can hear what he had to say to supporters right before the convention.
Thank you, everybody, for coming. Very much appreciate your support. And we're even standing here today. We're even standing. This is...
We're going to do a quick round, 5 minutes, and we'll do some Q&A, and then we'll meet and greet them.
All right. So... first of all, thank you. I'm going to turn my back. I don't mean to be rude, but the reason I'm here is because of you. The reason why I'm here is because since the very, very beginning, you believe. You believe that we deserve better. You believe that we are better. And you believe that we need to have someone who's going to work hard every single day in Washington for people here in the state of Michigan. I want to thank you for all the work that you put in, all the doors that you knocked, all the signatures that you collected, all the lies that you defended me against on social media, telling people the truth. I really personally appreciate that. And you standing here today is very, very important to me. So thanks for standing behind me. You have my back today. I'll have your back for the next 6 years.
Yeah. Well, we can do a quick scrum. Well, John, tell us why we're here today, and then we'll take some questions.
Sure. Well, we're here today to participate in the convention, to make sure that we have the best representation leading us forward, not only at the state and local level, but here to represent and proudly for the Republican Party. Not resistance, but results. That's the priority. That's what people in the state of Michigan want. And I'm so excited to be here with my members of our grassroots army who intend to move this thing forward. To make sure that we can represent all Michiganders and bring us all forward into the future. What we have here is a representation of a 2019 Dodge Ram and a 1975 AMC Pacer. This is just a representation of the options that the people of the state of Michigan have. The people of the state of Michigan have an option to continue with the status quo, to continue with old ideas of us versus them, male versus female, Democrat versus Republican, red versus blue. But we offer a new solution, being able to work with everybody, to pull everybody forward across the finish line so everybody can win. So we're not talking about left or right, black and white. We're talking about red, white, and blue. We need fresh energy, new perspective, clarity of vision, and a passion for service in the United States Senate. And we're not going to get that out of double talking Debbie. So we need to make sure that we have somebody representing us in the U.S. Senate who's not going to do it the old way, who's not going to try to separate us.
Right.
Because the pundits get their ratings and the politicians keep getting reelected. Right. But we here in Michigan get screwed. We need to make sure that we send somebody with the credentials, the proven leadership experience from the toughest situations, from the battlefield to the boardroom, right, to both keep us safe here, but also to bring economic opportunity back here.
There you go.
I have lived the American dream, and I believe that everybody in the state of Michigan deserves to have in the United States Senate who will protect the American dream for future generations. So I'm just so excited for this opportunity. Thank you all for being out here today. God bless you, and let's fly.
We'll take a couple questions.
Mr. James, on the surface, this would seem like a long shot, this campaign. What keeps you energized and optimistic that you can make this happen?
what keeps me energized and optimistic is we're here by the grace of God, and if a fired up grassroots army behind us, over 500,000 people around the state of Michigan who believe that we need change, who believe that we need a fighter on the floor of the U.S. Senate, who understands how to bring people together to accomplish the mission, to accomplish the goal. And people are sick and tired of being sick and tired. There are farmers who have been forgotten. There are neighborhoods who have been neglected. And right now in the state of Michigan, we need somebody with a passion for service. We need change in Washington. We need something new and fresh in Washington. And when people understand that I am the best person to bring this change, they come over to this campaign overwhelmingly. And we welcome with open arms.
Define change. What change needs to be made in Washington that one out of 100 senators could actually impact?
Well, I'll tell you one thing. Senator Stabenow has collected over $4 million in her time as a career politician, over 43 years and 20 years in Washington, and only gotten five bills passed into law. We need change that will able to have a representation on the floor of the U.S. Senate, and not someone like Senator Stabenow, who votes with Chuck Schumer 95% of the time, someone who votes with Hillary Clinton 93% of the time. That's a solid A. As a New York senator, I'll tell you, that change is having representation, leadership on the floor of the U.S. Senate to bring some of these jobs back to the state of Michigan, capital investment, talent, making sure that we begin to recuperate some money back to the state that we've been sending up to the federal government, making sure that we get all out that we can out of these opportunity zones so that we can get people into good paying jobs, so that their children can have a better future. Making sure that we don't just talk about fixing our education system the way Debbie Stabenow did in 2000 when she said that we would fix the education system in Michigan by 2010. It's 2018 and we have one of the worst educational systems in the country. That's reprehensible. We need to make sure that our children have access to the American dream, that they can continue to fight for what's better for future generations. We need to make sure we take care of our farmers, not to drown them in overburdensome regulation. Senator Stabenow says she sticks up for farmers. Meanwhile, she votes for the death tax, and she's supported the waters of the U.S. So these are just things that she will tell us. Senator Stabenow will tell us whatever she thinks it will take to win. But when you take a look at her lack of results and her initiatives that keep people in debt and dependent on the federal government for their next meals, they're inconsistent. And what she has failed to do for our veterans who've been going through issues when she just has begun her pandering just recently, we've been at war for a decade and a half, and we have failed to welcome our Vietnam veterans back properly after 50 years. We need to take care of mental health for our veterans. We need to take care of opioid issues all across the state, especially for our veterans, and not just talk about it, not just use our vests as a political prop, but I am a veteran who understands what it takes to fight for our veterans, and I will make it my number one issue when I get to Washington.
Going back to education, would you support Betsy DeVos's plan to use federal dollars to arm teachers?
That's a great question, and I'm really glad you asked me that. And the reason is two things. I graduated high school in 1999. I'm a millennial. I graduated high school. I walked across the stage 1 month after the Columbine massacre. I understand what it's like to walk across the stage and to go to class with the specter of gun violence hanging over your head. Debbie Stabenow has no clue. I also have two little boys who are going to preschool right now, and they're killing babies out there. Who among us would limit any option for state and local government to protect their babies? We have to make sure that we protect our children and protect our Second Amendment rights and not use this as a political ploy.
So yes?
I support having the state and local governments do what they believe is proper to take care of the children. And I believe that what this actually is the state of Texas using their Marshall program to allow the states to do what they believe is best to protect their children. I'm not going to take any option off the table. I quite frankly believe that as someone who fought to protect other people's children in Iraq using guns, why can't I protect my own kids? Why do we have gun-free zones when the only people who respect them are law-abiding citizens? Now, I think that every perspective needs to be taken into consideration. There are no right and wrong answers when it comes to protecting our Constitution and protecting our babies.
So it's a state's rights issue, then?
I believe, yes, sir.
All right, thanks, everyone.
Thank you.
So now let's listen to what the Republicans had to say after their entire slate had been nominated. This is the press conference, some audio from the press conference. And we're going to start with Laura Cox introducing the entire slate and then comments from Bill Schuette, Lisa Posthumus-Lyons, Mary Treader-Lang, and Tom Leonard.
Good afternoon. Is everybody here? Good afternoon.
Thank you for joining us. I want to first preface this with we're going to have a brief comments by each candidate, and then you can they will be available for individual interviews afterwards. So no asking questions during their comments. I was told to say that. Thank you for joining us to unify our ticket going into the November elections. Our theme for this convention and for the election as a whole was results, not resistance. Democrats have offered us nothing but resistance, obstruction, and vitriol. Republicans, on the other hand, offer and have delivered real results for Michigan. We have come so far under Republican leadership, truly earning Michigan the comeback state moniker. We know that there is more work to do. Republicans are just getting started, and we won't rest until Michigan is leading the nation in every column across the board. Luckily, we have an incredible ticket to rally behind, a ticket that we have completed today. We have John James, our candidate for United States Senate, who's going to send Debbie Stabenow packing. We will have an incredible congressional state, and we are very proud of our gubernatorial ticket, Bill Schuette and Lisa Pashmas-Lyons, who will provide the results that our state deserves. Our delegates have voted, and we have added more great candidates, Tom Leonard for Attorney General and Mary Trader Lang for Secretary of State. We are excited, we are energized, and we now begin the work of bringing our message to the voters of Michigan. And now I'd like to welcome to the podium the next governor of Michigan, a candidate who will bring results, not resistance, who will work to ensure that Michigan families have good jobs, higher paychecks, and a brighter future, Bill Schuette.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Laura Cox. And we have a great team, a great slate, a great team going to win in 71 days from now on November 6th. And I'm just delighted to be part of this team. And it is a strong team and a unified team. When you look at Lisa Pashmas-Lyons and John James and Mary Trader Lang and Tom Leonard, we have a terrific team representing diversity all across our state. And in Lisa Pashmas-Lyons, you have a lieutenant governor candidate that's a reflection of, I think, what Michigan can be. And the measure of her selection, I think, is important in terms of her quality, her experience, that she is an accomplished leader in the Michigan legislature and an elected official in Kent County. Lisa Pashmas-Lyons shines. Mary Trader Lang will do a terrific job as Secretary of State. Tom Leonard brings just marvelous experience as Speaker of the House, and we have a solid team. And I guess the point is, this is will be a classic race. This will be a classic race between the Democrats, far left, the most extreme ticket that's been assembled in Michigan in my memory. And the fact is, it's the Democrats, Whitmer and Gilchrist and the Democrats, it's more mandates, it's more spending, it's higher taxes. It is a recipe for the return to the lost decade. We've done one of those. We're not doing two. We're going forward. We're not going backwards. We're going to win in 71 days. As I said on the convention floor, we're going to win it all from top to bottom. And ladies and gentlemen, let me introduce our outstanding next Lieutenant Governor of the state of Michigan, Lisa Pashmas-Lyons. Lisa.
Thank you. Our work's not over today. We nominated several candidates, all the way from the top of the ticket, all the way on down. And our message today, wherever you were in a primary, wherever you were on a convention race, now is the time for Michigan Republicans to unite. Now is the time where we're going to come together, we're going to work together, because we need to elect all of our Republicans from the top of the ticket, all the way on down. And so that's the message going today, because we have a choice this election. This November 6th, we're going to decide, are we going forward or are we going to go backward? We will not go back to the lost decade. We want to move forward and continue Michigan's comeback, because Republican leadership has demonstrated real results for Michigan. And that's what we're going to continue to do under Bill Schuette as our next governor. Right now, I just want to turn it over and introduce to you the next Secretary of State, Mary Trader Lang.
First and foremost, I want to thank all the precinct delegates, the support here at the convention. It was strong support, and that's obvious that we're going to deliver and unite and be together as a team moving forward. I also want to thank my dear family for their support in this last year of running and moving forward. And just to reiterate, the comeback has been the very important part of me running in this election. I want to continue the forward momentum of the great state. I've delivered that message consistently across the state, and that we as a party will be together with the strongest ticket that we've had in years. And I am delighted to be part of this team, and I can't wait. Thank you very much.
All right, so I was supposed to come in between and introduce people, but I can't stand away as the next governor, so. So finally, I'm thrilled, absolutely thrilled, to be able to introduce a strong candidate, a great leader who will be effectively take on his opponent and win. He will make Michigan safer. He will make Michigan stronger for our families. My personal friend and the next Attorney General of Michigan, Tom Leonard.
My appropriations chair always has my back. You know, I don't know where to begin. First, let me just say I want to congratulate and thank, I know she's not here right now, but Senator Shoemaker on a hard-fought race. She has been an incredible partner in the legislature, and I know that she's going to be an incredible partner going forward, helping us, helping bring victories in November. So first, I want to thank her. Second, I want to congratulate and thank this entire ticket and this team. I could not be more proud to be a part of this. When I look at Attorney General Schutte, who is one of the hardest workers I've ever met, one of the best professionals I've ever met. He's an incredible friend, and he's going to do an incredible job at the top of our ticket. When I look at his nominee for Lieutenant Governor, people have asked me repeatedly what I think of Lisa Posthumous Lyons, and I served two terms with this lady. I sat with her on the floor, and I will tell you this, I have never met anybody as tough as Lisa Lyons. And Bill Schutte could not have made a better pick than her. When I look at Mary Trader Lane, I think she's been through three vehicles on this campaign, putting so many miles on, but just a tenacious and hard worker, and she is going to make an incredible Secretary of State. But then when I look at our chairman, Ron Weiser, there is not a better chairman in the entire country. And I have no doubt that we will have the resources and the team in place to win in November because of this man's hard work. So with that, I look forward to taking the message to the citizens over the next 10 weeks. When you look at where Michigan is at today compared to where it was 8 years ago, we were looking at nearly a 15% unemployment rate. Now I believe we're at 4.5%. 550,000 private sector jobs created. But look at the message we are going to be able to take to the citizens based solely on the hard work we've done in the past 2 years. It's because of Republican leadership that we are finally bringing monumental mental health reform to the state of Michigan. It is because of Republican leadership that we have once and for all ended the horrendous driver responsibility fees that are preventing 350,000 of our residents from lawfully obtaining a driver's license. I am ready to take this battle on in November and take the message to the citizens, and I have no doubt that we are going to see great things for Republicans ahead. So with that, thank you.
And now, our wonderful esteemed chairman, Ron Weiser.
Get a break, I have a final remarks. You know, I was born in South Bend, Indiana, forced to live there for my first 6 years, and then by choice moved to Michigan at 7 years old. So I love this state. I made it, this is my choice to be at, and this state has a great future, and you know what its past has been. And you saw that past go from the highs of the 60s and 70s, which I remember well, to the lows of the last decade, and back again to the highs. And I think our future is in front of us, and the Republicans are the people who've shown they can continue us going in the same direction with the results we've shown. We have no resistance to anything. We have only results to present. So that's the direction we're going, and this team will take us there. I'm certain of it. Thank you so much.
So we're gonna go.
We're gonna go on a bus for the next 4 days, and anyone who'd like to come with us, we would welcome you. And so we'll be crisscrossing the state, taking our message of, you know, more growth, more jobs, and bigger paychecks all across the state. We look forward to it. And 71 days, we're gonna win. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. We appreciate it. Thank you.
Okay, guys, a side issue here, not related to the convention, but something that is going to be happening on the legislative front is discussion on whether the Republicans are going to legislatively approve this petition to create paid sick leave mandates for workers in the state of Michigan. I have some audio here from Mike Shirky on the possibility of this and also the legislature approving an increase in the minimum wage. Let's listen to that and then get some reaction.
The paid sick leave citizen initiative, to me, would, if it passes, would only result in a huge not open or not welcome for business for Michigan. It is an onerous regulation that will just discourage people from investing capital in Michigan, and the voters need to be told that story so they understand how bad it is.
So it's more onerous than the minimum wage one, as far as you're concerned.
Well, they're both bad, you know, and I'm fearful of getting rid of the, you know, damaging our tip wage process that we currently have. But if I had to pick which one is the worst, in my opinion, it's the paid sick leave one.
So you would support the legislature taking action on this so that you could come back maybe later and make some reforms to it so it's not as onerous?
Right. We can listen to the voters, listen to the signatures of the people who signed those petitions, enact them, and then make some adjustments in them so that they aren't so onerous and so they aren't so negative for capital investment in Michigan.
So you wouldn't repeal it? You wouldn't pass it only to kill it?
No, I don't think it's fair. I don't think it's fair.
So Jack, the Senator Mike Shirky, presumably the next leader in the Senate Republicans, essentially saying they could go ahead and approve these proposals that the voters have already signed petitions for. Clearly they want action on this. His take is that the legislature should just go ahead and approve these and then maybe come back later and make some changes so that they're not so onerous. Is that good strategy here?
Let's put it this way. We've seen this movie before. And basically the idea here is that we lose either way, but we don't lose as much if we control it. There's an open question. I don't know how much they can change it if they come back in lame duck. I'm not sure what the rules are on how much they can gut it.
Oh, they can change it. They could repeal it if they wanted to. Mike Shirky saying that is not the plan at all.
Right. But the idea would be that for them to be able to, if they okay it and it doesn't get on the ballot, number one, they don't have to worry about these things driving up in their mind more people showing up who they would rather encourage to stay home.
Right.
And number two, they can then do some changes to it in lame duck because they passed it to begin with. So it is, again, this thing where we're better off controlling this, even though it's something we don't want to do, that's far better than having it go on the ballot and just have us lose complete control of it and then have it be even more onerous than if we have at least some kind of say about it.
And unlike the marijuana legalization proposal that the Senate Republicans had considered doing, this one has the backing of various business groups that would actually like to see them move in this direction, so they would have aerial cover. Seems like they would have more votes than they did for the marijuana legalization effort, John.
They might. There's a couple potential flaws with this strategy. One, I think you could actually very much invigorate the Democrats in terms of their response. You're going to give them an issue, a rally cry that they can run into November with. Look at what the Republicans are doing. They're being false prophets. They're passing this with the sole intention of coming back and taking it away from you. I think that could actually be a turnout tool for progressives, and it could really even increase the size of any blue wave or ripple, whatever it's going to wind up being. So there is a risk there. Clearly, it is just a citizen-initiated law, so it's a statute. You can just simply go through with a majority vote, change it. There's nothing wrong procedurally with doing that, but I think politically there's some potential risks.
And also the business groups and those that would be pushing this strategy better hope that the Republicans at least retain one chamber, because if they don't, then the Democrat majority just come back after January 1st and take out the changes and put them all back in as is. So there's always that as well. Mm-hmm. They got to consider.
I'm guessing that this has probably been thought through. They've had time to do it. And I may be wrong, but I'm guessing that this is going to be one that they'll vote on, and there'll be the people there representing the business groups, and they will be counting a yes vote on this as a plus, putting in the plus column for the people that vote on it, and a no vote is being in the negative column. I would not be a bit surprised.
All right. Well, with that, that's going to be it for this week's edition of the Mirrors Monday podcast. Thanks to John and Jack. Our sponsors, AT&T, for sponsoring this and all our other podcasts, all the folks that we talked to at the Michigan Republican Party Convention, at the Michigan Democratic Party Convention. Until next week, I'm Kyle Malin. Take care.
This is Billy McCluskey from Palm Springs reporting for NBC Sports of America. 20 seconds to the start of the 31st Formula Race on Hudson.